Margaret, hi. Pleasure as always. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Don.
And I guess let's jump right in. We'll look at what happened in South Carolina and what it means.
Well, it's interesting, Don. It means what it always means, that white supremacy is alive and well. Unfortunately, it's easy for people to point fingers at a killer like Dylann Roof and then dismiss him as a lone nut, as a crazy person, and not talk about the fact that there are people who don't sign up for white supremacy groups who are, in fact, equally racist. The entire society is, the entire system is. And while it's important to talk about the outliers like him, well, they're outliers only in the way that they carry out their fantasies. But it's a fantasy for millions of other people, too. When he was arrested, the police took him out to lunch. He said he was hungry, and they took him to Burger King. So clearly, that is a police fantasy, to be able to get away with killing 9 black people in one fell swoop. He's gotten raised almost $1 million already for people who support him. And of course, there's a lot of discussion about the Confederate flag, South Carolina being one of the states that flies the flag on government grounds. So people have focused on the flag, which obviously I'm no fan of, but it can also be a distraction from the racism that's very deeply embedded and accepted in our society. So I, for one, am not talking a lot about the flag.
Yeah, and this kid is clearly a product of something. He didn't spontaneously pop up. And this kind of crime predates the internet by several hundred years, so he's not a product of hate groups on the internet either. Although, you know, these can be factors. If you look at indigenous populations around the world, though, throughout history, you didn't have some member of the Iroquois pop up and decide that someone with different colored hair or something should be murdered. This is something that's, you know, the product of a much deeper tradition, for lack of a better word.
Well, it's, you know, it's about the way this country was founded. It was founded on conquest. The entire nation, from sea to shining sea, the lower 48 and the two additional states were all conquered by Europeans. Land was stolen from indigenous people. In states like South Carolina, where the very epicenter of chattel slavery of African people, South Carolina was the first state to secede in the process that began the Civil War. So this is all very deeply ingrained. So we shouldn't be surprised when someone like him goes on a rampage. And we also shouldn't be surprised when when there's stop and frisk or police brutality or the fact that the United States has the biggest prison system of any country in the world, all the while criticizing other countries for their human rights abuses. We have a lot of human rights abuse right here.
Why the choice of, assuming as I do, and I'm going to guess that you do, that there are some folks in power who step in at these moments and try to divert the movement that arises in reaction to these kinds of things. Why the choice of the Stars and Bars, for example, instead of the prison industrial complex?
Well, that's easier. It's easy to point fingers at rednecks and to talk about how bad they are and how racist they are and how stupid they are. Talking about the prison industrial complex means taking on we have prisons. Many prisons in our country are run by corporations. So that means taking on people with big money. It means taking on the attitudes of a majority of white people who think the prison system is just fine because everybody knows it's mostly for black people. So you would really have to force an examination of individual racist beliefs and from people who don't think of themselves as being racist, but they think it's just fine for black people to be locked up, and to fight politicians, to fight corporations. You know, many things that we use every day are made by prisoners. So we have a prison system. It's, you know, it really goes back to the days of slavery. We have people in prisons who make, they don't just make license plates anymore. They make Kevlar vests for the military, or they make furniture for IKEA, or their call centers. Very often call centers, the person you're talking to is someone incarcerated in this country. So it would have to, we'd have to attack a lot of very powerful interests to talk about the prison industrial complex. If you just talk about the Confederate flag, you just, you get to feel superior and point a finger at one part of the country.
Mm. You know, I think I'm going to have to start being a little kinder to the people that interrupt me with those, the telemarketing calls, knowing that. You know, we saw the president go there. You know, it was a necessary move politically for President Obama, for sure, to chime in. And then there are the, you know, the usual characters that, you know, go wherever these things are, and their message is generally something symbolic and does not result in organizing some major action against the real insults, like the prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. What do you see, like, if you look at the landscape of the response so far, what do you see officialdom has constructed to do this, aside from, you know, including the flag, but in addition to that?
Well, once again, we have, I find it, there's two things that are, aside from the murders themselves, there are a couple of things that are very unfortunate about this incident. One, the families of the victims immediately talked about forgiveness, about forgiving the killer. And this is a terrible thing for all Black people, because we are the group, no matter what has happened to us, who are expected to forgive. Nobody talks about anyone else forgiving. The Boston bombing, their victims' families, nobody asked them to forgive. So once again, we see that Black people are supposed to live in this constant state of fear, and try to be the good Black person who may, you know, hopefully won't be harmed. And everyone praised them. The media praised them. Everyone in officialdom praised them for that. And I think that's quite terrible. You know, the other thing is this guy was caught very quickly, and he's going to be prosecuted under a hate crime statute. I have mixed feelings, frankly, about hate crime statutes. So it's pretty easy for this. He left a manifesto, racist manifesto. So he's going down. I mean, he could get the death penalty. In fact, South Carolina is a death penalty state. Right. But, you know, officialdom won't, there's a line they won't cross. Nobody will talk about the ways in which he represents this country and its history. Nobody says it's okay for Black people to show their righteous indignation and express their anger and make a demand for justice. And Black people, unfortunately, have joined in praising the forgiveness. It's an opportunity for Black people to learn, to relearn how to make demands, and to learn that it's okay to make a demand, and that, you know, you don't have to, you know, everyone says, well, they just don't want to hate. Well, no one said that you have to hate, but you have to make a demand for justice and talk about your anger about it. So I think that opportunity was missed. And then, of course, Obama shows up at the funeral. One of the pastor of the church was also a state senator in South Carolina, Clementa Pinckney. And the president went to his funeral on Friday. And apparently I couldn't bear to watch it. Started singing Amazing Grace. And everybody, it's just sickening to me that Obama has done so little for Black people, and he gets credit for singing in a church. So it's just, we're back at square one. You know, a lot of these things could move us forward, but there's a lot of insistence on, in this case, supporting him no matter what. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate choice of song, too, given the history of the author of that, you know, who was a slaver. He wasn't just a slaveholder, but a slave trader.
Yeah, Newton, I think John Newton, I believe, an Englishman in the 1760s, was working on a slave ship when he first wrote the lyrics to the song. The story is that the ship was caught in a storm and nearly sank, and right. he nearly died. Yeah. And like most people, he prayed to God, "God, if you get me out of this, I'll be a better guy." Right. And he wrote this song. According to legend, he then stopped left the slave trading business, but that's not true.
Right.
He continued for 7 or 8 years or so after that. But I'm not crazy about the song. Maybe that's why I don't like the song. I never liked it as a song, and I don't like its history and the fact that it's been embraced.
Problematic. On the forgiveness thing, I remember back in September and October of 2001, I interviewed Phyllis Rodriguez, who ended up as one of the founders of 9/11 Families for a Peaceful Tomorrow. Her son was killed in the World Trade Center towers on September 11, 2001, and she was one of the many voices, by the way, that spoke out among families saying, let's not use this as a reason to go to war and to declare mm-hmm. a state of siege here in this country. And they got almost no media coverage whatsoever.
That's correct.
And we got wall-to-wall coverage of this family's forgiveness. What's going on there?
Well, it just tells you how it's used. People are expected to forgive if it's something the system wants to get away with. And if it's something that the system wants to use to its benefit, it's ignored. 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows I've never seen them get coverage in the corporate media. Never. But they have a very powerful message, and that's why. But 9/11 was used as a pretext for making war. We're still at war in Afghanistan, the longest war in American history. It was a pretext for destroying our civil liberties. It was a pretext for a power grab and a pretext for more surveillance. So, no, they're not going to say that people should have forgiven. And then, of course, it's pretty typical of America. It's like, no, we're the one that kicks ass around the world. Nobody comes over here and kicks ours. Yeah. So the worst aspects of the culture of manifest destiny that America's ordained to control the rest of the world was threatened by those terror attacks, and we're living with it to this day.
And what's interesting also, if you remember the factual basis here, you had 18 guys with box cutters who were almost exclusively, mm-hmm. I think there were one or two that weren't, Saudi nationals.
Yes.
The response was to attack Afghanistan and Iraq. It would be like if the response from the church in Charleston was not forgiveness, but rather to attack like a Chinese community in Miami or something.
Yeah, it was, they had designs on these places. These are places near the oil. Well, Iraq is an oil-producing nation. Afghanistan is in the center of oil production, with pipelines and possible pipelines yeah. going to and from Iraq and Iran and into some of the former Soviet republics. So it was important to snatch that location. I mean, the claim was that Afghanistan had that Bin Laden was in Afghanistan, and others who hatched the plot were in Afghanistan. But one of the plotters was in Germany, so we should have bombed Germany, I guess.
Again,
but
yeah.
it was, but that wasn't the point. The point is for the United States to control that region of the world. And, the war on Iraq had been going on for the first Gulf War was in the early 90s and the years of sanctions. So, Iraq always had a target on its back from the United States. So neocons were salivating anyway. So it was like, let's connect the dots, which, was all a lie, of course, as we know. But it was a convenient excuse to do what they had wanted. Anyway, they had tried to get talk Clinton into attacking Iraq, and he said no. Bombing and sanctions were enough in his case.
Right.
But it made it easier for them to get away with things they had wanted to do anyway.
What is the response that should take place to this terrorist attack, which is a terrorist attack, was a terrorist attack on the mm-hmm. church?
Well, because the assailant was caught right away in this particular case, and it's pretty clear, I believe he did confess also. So in the particulars of this case, it appears that the judicial system will do its job, but we can't focus actually on this case itself so much. But I do think we have to speak up about anti-Black racism, which to me is still the biggest problem this country has. The Supreme Court decided rightly that there's a constitutional right to marry for same-sex marriage. So we see other groups slowly get more legal protections, and I'm glad that's the case. But the big elephant in the room is still anti-Black racism. That's why we have a prison industrial complex. It's why we have charter schools, which are destroying the public school system. It's why we have gentrification. I could go on and on. So that's still the biggest problem in America, is anti-Black racism in particular. So this is an opportunity to talk about that and to talk about it in a different way.
Do you see anyone in officialdom focusing on that particular aspect of it?
No, I don't see it at all. Obama does not like to talk about Black people, or he steadfastly refuses to do anything for us. He's always said the rising tide lifts all boats. I'm improving things for everybody. And then Black people defend him and say, well, he's not just the president for Black people. Well, he's never the president for Black people. Most well-known police murder cases of the past year, there have been no federal prosecution, none. And they claim the bar is too high, and that's a lie. They always say that when they don't want to do something. This is the same administration which said that the president had the right to assassinate American citizens if he so chose. So I would have thought the bar was high for that, but they did that and got away with it and killed Anwar al-Awlaki and his son. So whenever they say the bar is too high, that means we don't want to do anything. So there was precedent. There's precedent for prosecuting George Zimmerman, who killed Trayvon Martin. I don't know if you remember back in the 90s, the Crown Heights riots. The young man was acquitted for killing Yankel Rosenbaum. And there was a federal prosecution. So there's a precedent for it. George Bush, the first President Bush, prosecuted the police in Los Angeles who beat Rodney King after they were acquitted. So there's clearly precedent for this sort of for these cases. And he could do it if he wanted to, but he doesn't want to. The last thing he wants is to be connected with Black people, even as Black people continue to worship him. During the eulogy at Pinckney's funeral in Charleston, when he talked about the Confederate flag, he made some comment about the valor of Confederate soldiers or something like that. He felt the need to soft pedal his condemnation. So, unfortunately, no, I don't see anybody in officialdom taking this on.
And the president, of course, has treated, for example, Private Manning, other whistleblowers differently, and as you mentioned, people that he determined in his sole power were terrorists. And you have a fact pattern of terrorism here, I think.
Oh, sure, we do. It's but the word terrorism, it's a it's a propaganda tool more than anything. It's very imprecise meaning. It's what they want it to be. When they want to get somebody, they're a terrorist. When they don't care that much, they're not. Chelsea Manning and others. Obama is the first president to use an act from 1917 to prosecute whistleblowers,
right.
The Espionage Act. And, it's very heavy-handed. So he has prosecuted whistleblowers more harshly than any of his predecessors. So he's certainly not going to be, and as I said, the bar would seem to be high to do that, but it just means he gets who he wants to get.
Okay, Margaret Kimberly, BlackAgendaReport.com. Thank you as usual. A pleasure.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks.